go.
We are, let's see, first, before we start back into the material, questions of any kind. I always ask that, nobody ever has any. Okay.
It's a little hard to see the...
Oh, you're right. Yes, questions. Could you push the light switch? Yes, I can push the light switch.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll get to this in a moment. Right now, we're sort of over here. I was working my way through a demonstration that there are some issues that the parsimony method, that parsimony methods, simple ones, have, which is important because it's important in terms of deciding whether to use them or other methods, and sometimes they may have difficulties, and you have to know about that. But the other thing to say is we'll see next time, in the next lecture, there are people who take the view that that philosophical considerations lead us uniquely to the parsimony approach. The demonstration that there are some statistical problems with it work against that, in my view. And that in a sense is a bigger issue of what is the proper framework for thinking about how to infer phylogenies. I should mention that we'll be getting to the controversies on this next time when I talk about history and philosophy of the field. But actually, providentially, a huge uproar arose on Twitter under the hashtag ParsimonyGate last week, on the 15th, as a result of an editorial in a journal called Cladistics. Then there were a lot of people reacting to it, and then people got mad at each other for various reasons. And it was fun reading. It was also distressing seeing some of the names people called each other. But we'll get to that. So it's actually sort of on Twitter. It's died down now, but it's on Twitter. Where we were was with a four-species tree as an example, as the simplest example of this problem. In a situation in which you have a character that can go back and forth between 0 and 1 at a constant, it's the simplest, sort of the simplest discrete stochastic process of going back and forth at stochastic times between two states symmetrically. And we had used that to get some idea of how you should, what set of weights in parsimony is justified by a statistical approach using likelihood. We threw all that last week and come up with a sort of formula for how much weight there should be. But it's also true at least you could see it as plausible in the numerical examples I gave you, that as the rates of change get lower and lower and lower, likelihood more and more selects the most parsimonious tree. So that is, and the unweighted most parsimonious tree, because these weight formulas get more and more equal among characters, even if those characters have rates of change that differ by tenfold or whatever. Okay, now we're using the same sort of a model to look into the issue of whether there are situations under which parsimony tends to give you the wrong tree. And what I was showing last time was you could list for cases of, let's say, 0-1 characters, there were 16 possible patterns of characters. If you thought of your data table and you had your species down the side and your sites or your characters along the top, columns, each column would have four things in it, and if you read them off and you get AATC, let's say, then I'm saying that is of the pattern XXYZ. And there are four, or if you get you know, if you get 0, 1, 0, 0, that's of the pattern X, Y, X, X. And what turns out when you're using 0, 1 characters is that of all 16 patterns, most of them don't make any difference. They don't give different scores to different tree topologies. But ones that have two X's and two Y's, that is, there is two of one state and two of the other, do actually give you different scores to different tree topologies. So it turns out that in deciding whether a data set is going to lead you to this topology or that, all you really have to do are look at those patterns and forget the other sites. They're going to assign some number, but it'll be the same number to each tree topology, and it won't have any influence on which topology is selected. And I showed you at the end of last time, I argued, that the most frequent one, if you just tote up, go through the columns of your data matrix, and every time you hit one of these that has two X's and two Y's, you figure out which of these it's in, and you just work out the numbers of them, that controls which is the most parsimonious tree one on that data set. Things like the order in which they are, left to right in the data, have no influence whatsoever. It's just how many there are of them. Okay. We got that far. Now the issue is, well, if I have a given tree, I have some tree, a true tree that magically is known to me, and I generate data on it. If I generate lots and lots of characters, a data set with lots of characters, is it guaranteed if I have enough data to push me towards the right tree? And the answer is actually not always. And so we're going to try to figure out when it doesn't do that. And for that, before we get to this, we have to say, well, if we have a known tree and we have this model of evolution that's doing the same thing in every character but independently, and then we start looking at columns in the data matrix. Each column is like a draw from a set of possibilities. There are probabilities of each possible outcome on the true tree, given the process and given the tree, and given the eraser. Just a second. Okay, so if I have a true tree, okay, here's true tree, which of course the end user doesn't know, and then I have a model, some process that's going on, that will give me probabilities of getting a 0, 0, 0, or a 0, 0, 0, 1, or a 0, 0, 1, 0, and so on down to 1, 1, 1, 1. Okay, each of the possible data outcomes will have some probability of arising. We're assuming evolution goes independently in each column, in each character. So each character is a draw from this set of possibilities according to these probabilities, which in real life you don't know, but we, as imagining ourselves as having total knowledge, we do know. Now, if we generate data from this, in the long run, the fraction of characters in each of these classes will approach the probability. That's called the law of large numbers in probability theory and statistics. And in particular, what we have to do is find the ones that have states like 0, 0. Well, it's actually the next one here. I'll get out of the way. Here. Some of them will be probabilities of these patterns. So we take those and we'll get some sort of probability of getting that pattern. And that will come from several different outcomes. I don't mean to point to this one. P of Well, that'll come from two outcomes, P of 0011 and 1100. And there are two other pairs, and so we have probabilities of X, Y, and probabilities of X, Y, Y, X. We're not writing possibilities like Y, X, X, Y, because we're just following the convention that the first symbol is called X. The first one we see on the left is called X. So those are the probabilities of these three outcomes. So it's like we're rolling dice, rolling a die that's loaded and has 16 sides. And so they're just arbitrary probabilities that actually come out of our model and are controlled by the tree. And then we have probabilities of these three outcomes. And what I can say is the following. If we keep rolling the die, the same die, again and again and again and again, the fraction of sites that are in these three classes will approach the probabilities here. Same as tossing a coin a zillion times, you get, in the end, closer and closer and closer to the expected fraction of heads. Here it's got three phylogenetically informative or parsimony informative outcomes plus a whole bunch of others which you can sort of lump together and forget about. Okay, so the argument is going to be if we can figure out on the true tree under the model what these three probabilities are, can we find situations in which the highest one is not the one that selects the topology of the true tree. So we've boiled everything down. We've considered this whole big data set, and they've said all that matters is the counts of the different kinds of columns. We can forget about left-right order. We can boil it down to 16 numbers that we collect out of that data set, and then we can just say, since the same process is operating in each column by assumption, though we will approach the true probabilities, our data will approach that as we collect lots and lots and lots of data. And the question that this is raising is a statistical property called consistency. A statistical estimator is consistent if collecting, I'll say it informally, because to say it formally you've got to hedge yourself and do all sorts of conditions, but basically, if upon collecting larger and larger and larger amounts of data, you tend to converge to the true answer. And it's held to be a desirable property. I think it's a desirable property, but I'm biased. And there's another property called bias. And biologists, for some reason, are in love with bias instead of consistency, and they get very upset if an estimate is biased, but they don't worry too much about whether it's consistent. I don't know why. Anyway, okay, so what is our counterexample going to be? The counterexample is going to be an unrooted tree with a symmetrical 0-1 parsimony, and here is the true tree topology. And there are branches, they have branch lengths, and the lengths are unequal, but we're not showing the lengths here. What we're going to show is the net probability of change. Remember that we had a formula for that. In fact, it's 1/2, 1 minus, you don't really need to use it in this thing. There was the formula that you change, that you get a net change going along a branch of a certain length with the character changing at a certain rate. Here the characters are all going to change at the same rate. And so what we're going to say is there are two probabilities. These are not P and Q that add up to one. These are independent quantities. They don't add up to one. There's two branches that are equal in length and long, and they have a net probability of change P. All the other branches are equal in length and short, and they have net probability Q. Okay, so that's the simple case I'm going to use that will sometimes generate difficulties. It's when you have two long branches, but they're not connected directly to each other. Please.
When you say net probability, you mean probability
for that entire branch or for both of the P branches?
The P, the little p here,
yeah,
is the probability that if you start with a 0 here, what you get at the end is a 1.
Okay, thank you.
Also, it's the probability, because of the symmetry of everything, it's the probability if you start with a 1 that you end up with a 0. Not worrying about how many times it might have changed along the way. Yeah?
Is this saying that A and C had the change occur at the same time?
No. It could be that if a change occurs in this branch, which we don't know yet, that it didn't change, and there it changed. Whereas over here, it changed right away, changed back, and changed again, and ended up. Nothing about simultaneity in these. What's happening in the branches is independent, but the way they're tied together establishes conditions on their starting points. So for example, that these two are tied, if the root were say here, if these two were tied together like that, they have to start out in the same state. And that gives them a non-independence of the final outcome. But the events get, once you know the starting point that they're both starting at, the events in those two branches are completely independent. Okay, so we're going to say, well, if you have a 0 here, there's a probability P that the other end is 1. If you have a 1 there, there's a probability P that the other end is 0. So now all we have to do is work out from that the probability of all of these outcomes. So if we take an outcome like 0, 0, 1, 1, we put a 0, a 0, a 1, and a 1 there. And we don't know what the states were in the interior, so there are four cases, 0 here, 0 here, 0 and 1, 1 and 0, 1 and 1. Okay, we saw that before. We're also going to pick a root. It's easiest to like pick it maybe at the left edge. It turns out that for the purpose of calculating these probabilities, it doesn't matter where you put the root. You get the same numbers. That's not obvious, but it's true. Okay, so let's see. So if the internal, if the pattern is 1, 1, 0, 0, and the internal nodes are 1, 1, so the tree would look like this. 1, let's see, 1, 1. I got it wrong. 1, 1, 0, 0. Yeah. That's not the pattern I gave before. I gave 0, 0, 1, 1, but this is 1, 1, 0. Zero. You want to make these short, so let's make them shorter. Okay, there they are. So, what is the probability that you get this? Well, it's simply the probability that at the root you start with a 1. Well, under this symmetrical process, we have a built-in implicit assumption that evolution has been going on for a very long time up till there, under this same process. And if so, there's a 50% chance at that point that it starts out at a 1. So that gives you a factor of a half, probability of a half, which you see up here. And then you simply have to look at each of the branches, see whether or not it involves change. We number them, by the way, for convenience, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the middle one, 5. And what you will see is you need to, the probability of no change here is 1 minus p. Of no change here is 1 minus q, of change there is p, of change there is q, and in the middle, no change, 1 minus q. Let me see if I've got that right. I do. I think that what I'm doing here, it doesn't look right, but it is. It's just that I've got the terms in the slightly wrong order. 1 minus p, 1 minus q, and then on the right side, p and q, and so the interior branch is here, it's 1 minus q. This is the correct expression. Okay, just that maybe after telling you how we numbered the branches, I then violated them. So, there is the expression for 1, 1. Well, there's three other expressions. I'm not going to bother you with them, but you can work through them easily enough. And so the probability of getting a 1100 is this thing. It's this term for this is the one we just computed. And then here's the term for one of the others. One of them has a change in every branch. If I put a 0 here and a 1 there, you get a change in every single branch. And so it's a P. It'll be 2 P's and 3 Q's. There's three branches of length Q and of probability Q and two of probability B. So it's P squared Q third, and then here's another one. So there they are, and you look at it and you just say, well, doesn't look very meaningful looking at it. You can then add them up. You can say, well, okay, what about XXYY? Well, there actually are two cases and they're symmetrical. So they're just each have this expression. And you add those up and the factor of half goes away, basically, is what happens. So you get, for XXYY, this thing, which we just saw with a factor of half, and for XYXY, you get that thing. For XYY, you get that thing. Now, at this point, I have to tell you a little about how the work was done. This was done in 1978 in a paper in systematic zoology by me. And in the mid-70s, when I was working on it, there was a computer algebra system on the very first interactive mainframe on campus, which was in the medical school, second floor of T-Wing. And I was hooked up to that. And I sat down with my pen and paper, and I worked out these expressions, and I was looking at the right conditions, and it was coming out kind of ugly. Didn't much like the answer. So then I said, well, maybe I made a mistake. So I did it all again. I started from scratch, derived all the formulas, and got a different expression. My condition then was a bit different. Still looked a little ugly. And I said to myself, well, one of these is right, but I don't know which one. Let me go to the computer, to the Locke Computer Center in T269, and I'll type, well, I wouldn't go to it, I went to it over the network, and by the way, not the internet, because the internet didn't exist locally. It was through wire. You had to get them to hook you up with wires running through the Health Sciences Center. And I then laboriously typed these expressions in and did the algebra on the Locke computer. So I got a much nicer looking answer. And it wasn't the same as either of my results. And then I said, oh, the computer algebra system is wrong. So I started computing some numbers by plugging in P's and Q's, and to my horror, both of mine were wrong and the computer algebra system was right. So it wasn't the bug, it was the bug in me. Okay, what we're gonna do is, using these, all this has now been verified as being right, and we're gonna say, okay, what we're trying to find out is which of these numbers is biggest, so we can see which topology it selects. Now, the topology that we get has the two A and B separated from C and D. The central branch has A and B connected to one end, and C and D connected to the other. So this number should be biggest if, in collecting vast amounts of data, you converge to the true tree. Okay, so we will see what happens. What you can do, this is all just, it can be shown that algebra, is take the two other P's, subtract one from the other, and then you get an expression that you can factor, and it comes out like this. Now, the thing about this is, P and Q are going to be numbers a bit less than a half or smaller. They won't be bigger than a half, because remember that curve that we had, the one using this formula over here, goes up and flattens out, not quite reaching, asymptotically approaching a half. So they're less than a half. So P and Q are going to be less, somewhere between 0 and a half. If you look up here, you'll see that 1 minus 2 Q is then a positive number, because Q isn't as big as a half. The other numbers in square brackets here have all got to be non-negative, because they're squares, and they're multiplied together and added up. So this whole expression has to be positive, and that says that the, this P over here is going to always be at least as big as that one. It will never be the case that x, y, y, P of x, y, y, x in this model would be bigger than the other one. Let's go back for a second. That says that of these two expressions down here, this one is bigger than that one. So now we say, okay, which is the biggest? Well, we know it can't be this one because that one's got to be bigger. So we just have to compare those two. So now we want to subtract them from each other and see when that number is positive. So we want to subtract P of x, take P of x, x, y, y, the one from the pattern that gets you to the true tree topology, subtract off the second one. Well, you do that, and after some cursing and swearing and crumpling up pieces of paper, checking on computer algebra systems, you come up with this. And you look at it and say, well, again, this term's got to be positive. And we're asking whether this whole thing is greater than zero. This one, well, you don't know. It depends on this versus that. So the question is Q1 minus Q greater than P squared? Things are coming out much more simply now. Okay, so there's just a condition that the under the simple model. Let's see, I'll come back to that in a moment. Here is, for this condition, this is the condition for the biggest one being the one that gives you the true tree. And here's Q, and here's P. They can go as high as a half. You plot them out, and you simply find that when you set this equal, that's this curve. And the curve dives into 0, 0. It goes up almost vertically at first. Comes up here. At the other end, it just goes symmetrically. Actually, if you draw a line down through here, the diagram is symmetrical and can be flipped, which isn't that interesting. But okay. So it says that there are some combinations of P and Q for which you're in this region. This region is where this condition isn't true. It's turned around the other way. And that means, in those cases, the second of those capital P quantities, this one here, will be the biggest. If you look at such a case, let me go back one now. Here is the case where the small branches have little q, I didn't do it on this, didn't show it on here, little q equal to 1/6, and p equal to 0.4. If you look on the diagram I just showed you, 1/6 is about here, and we go up. Well, when you get to 0.4, you're right there. You're in the inconsistency zone. Okay. And so that's the case we have numerically here. So what I did is I simulated 0, 1 characters on this tree with those probabilities. So you're in this bad zone. And this just to give you an idea of the process. Here are the probabilities for the three capital P's. This, let's see if I get this right. That's the true tree. Here is the probability for capital P for the pattern that gets you the true tree, which is to have the two X's on the left and the two Y's on the right. Here is the alternative. And that has the two states the same in the long branches. And over here is the other one, the one that we said is pretty much ruled out all the time, or at least if you get enough data, it'll always lose out in all cases because it's smaller than either of these. So there are the numbers. They add up, by the way, to about 28%. So 72% of the time you get one of the other ones, which doesn't have any effect on a parsimony method. So here we are with 100 characters. I simulated, and I got the correct answer was most, the correct pattern, the second one was most frequent. The other two were tied, they were less frequent. So that, if we'd done this estimation, we'd get the right answer. Okay. Double the number of characters, and you get, again, it works out similarly, the best answer and then the other two are lower. Get up to 300, they're getting close to each other. 400, still all the way through here, out to about 700 characters. Now, I should say what I'm doing here. I actually simulated 1,000 characters. And then I analyzed only the first 100, the first 200, the first 300, and so on. So it's all the same. The first part of the characters are always the same in these. I'm just analyzing more and more, further and further, making the sequencing longer and longer. This is zeros and ones, not DNA data. And in this case, after you get out, when you get out to here, you suddenly start getting cases where the most part, the correct tree is not the most parsimonious one. That data set will slightly prefer the one where the long branches are next to each other. And as you go on, you do find that, and then sometimes it goes back to selecting the true tree. They sort of vie with each other until you get up to about 1,700 or 1,800 characters. I'm not sure which it is. And then, I think what I'm doing here is going by units of 100 characters. Then you start to get always the wrong tree. And as you go on, these are the fraction, the scale here is the fraction of the time you get each of those the fraction of the patterns that come out these three ways in that single simulation with the 10,000 characters. Okay. And the probability is 0.112, and 0.112 is somewhere near there. I haven't plotted it really, but it's about there. 0.098 is about there, and 0.076 is about there. So roll the die enough times, and you get the expected probabilities ahead. And any casino will tell you that if you want to make money, rely on that. Now, there is not a general pattern that the smallest data sets give you the right answer. That's not always true. It happens to be true in this data set. The first 100 characters happen to favor the pattern that pushed you towards the most parsimonious, that in a parsimony method pushed you towards the right tree. If you ran it all again, you got another 10,000 characters, and then started analyzing different numbers of them, you might find completely different results earlier on. Because as you can see, the noise in where you are vertically is much greater to the left. As you get out here, things are pretty close to their expected frequencies and they're converging on them. So I thought that's a fairly vivid picture. I could do the same plot. I could do the same plot for another run. I haven't done it. Probably I should. Let's see. I've hooked up these trees up here to be the ones that this pattern would recommend. This recommends the correct one. This recommends the long branches near each other. This connects one long and one short, and then there's a little interior branch and the two other short ones. Sorry, one long and one short with one long and one short and an interior branch separating those. So you can see that with parsimony in a simple naive evolutionary model, there's trouble. Please, you first raised your hand.
So if you were able to sample more of the time between the traits, would you be able to avoid this problem?
Not sure I understand that. Try again.
So
sampling more of what?
So So like in the true tree, we have the X's in on the same and the Y's on the same side, right?
Well, in a pattern that would cause parsimony to favor the true tree.
Right.
So if that pattern, XX here, YY there, comes out most frequent in a data set, then you get this tree topology, which is the truth.
Right. So if we could have a large data set, but sample more time.
You mean longer branches?
Shorter branches, I think.
Well, you mean more combinations of times?
Yes, maybe, yes.
Let me look back and... No, sorry, I have to get you to this. We are running we're running the simulation with a tree which is at this point in the combinations of P and Q. You're saying, suppose I try more P's and try more Q's, in effect.
Yeah.
Well, you can see that if I somehow knew that lots of different P's applied and lots of different Q's applied all at the same time, then you get a different outcome. You'd sort of be, you probably would mostly favor the correct tree. That would be a different model because it would say that in each character there's a different P and Q combination. Then all bets are off in a sense. So that is where that relates to this. We are just using one possible combination. I deliberately chose it to be in this inconsistency zone. If I'd chosen it down here, if P had been instead 0.25 and Q had been 0.16, then when I calculated those probabilities, the one that would be biggest would be the one for the true tree. As we piled up data, the curve that would be highest there would be the one for the correct tree. And parsimony, which means that in that combination, you run, generate the data that way, and then run parsimony on it, it's okay. It tends to be okay if you collect enough data. As you see, initially it's very noisy, and you can get almost anything with a small data set. There were several other people who were scratching their ears or scratching the tops of their heads, which is very dangerous in this class. I think we saw a couple of others, but go ahead.
If you go back to the graph we were on before, what are the other possible tree topologies? Because the
you're talking about going back to the simulation that I showed you.
So moving forward.
This one?
Yeah. So given that the frequencies don't add up, what are the other patterns that are possible that contribute to probability?
Okay. The other patterns are things like 0001, which does not favor either any of the, it gives the same score to every tree topology.
Okay.
All of the other ones that are not these XXYY or XYYX or XYXY, if you get those, and in this simulation, when you're out here in number of cars, great many of them are, 72% of them approximately are those others, but they actually don't influence which tree you get. Other questions about this? Yes?
I guess this sort of goes to that question about maybe like different branch lengths, but do the P and Q values have anything to do with, or are they related to at all, like the time at which you could sample those characters? Like we're talking about looking at character states at different time points in the evolution of the species. Are those related all to the time at which you would sample?
They are in the following sense. People are doing phylogenies on things like viral infections, mm-hmm. HIV, for example, in which you can go in and sample at different times and take samples. And if it turned out that you were sampling early on and then you're sampling later on, it might be that these two long branches are simply ones of samples that were taken late. and the short, the other two are samples that were taken early.
Okay.
With things changing at approximately a constant rate. Or, if you were doing discrete characters that are, say, morphological characters and you have fossil data, it might be that some are sampled early and some are samples are earlier in evolution than others. But the other possibility beyond those, that's where you have roughly constant rates of change per unit time, but the branches are sampled at points where that are in different parts of the time scale. But it could also be that what's happening here, you'll notice that the formula here has an RT in it, where R is the rate of change.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that these two branches are in time not that big, but they have a high rate of change. Something about the environmental conditions changing and selecting characters more fiercely, you know, more frequently, changing character states more frequently. The weather is changing more in this branch for the particular place and time that it times it was, than, and also in this branch, but less in those branches. So it's either, it would be in clock-like evolution with a constant rate, sampling at different times, either geologically or you know, with a hypodermic needle, or it can just be the branches are different lengths, not because they're different in time, but because they're different in evolutionary rate. Okay. So, we get a zone. I'm afraid it's named after me, which I point out is like having a black hole named after you. Anyway, you have the zone of inconsistency if the two branches that are not connected directly to each other but are separated by a short branch are big enough, then that's the situation where you get what's called long branch attraction. Under a parsimony analysis, the long branches tend to like to move together on the tree, and that's what's going on here. To go back, if you look, say you look down here, now, as you get the P and Q small, you tend to leave the inconsistency zone. You tend to be consistent. Because if P and Q are very small, say you cut them both by half, and then you cut them both by half again, and then you cut them both by half again, you'll be starting out here and heading roughly towards zero. And as you get down here, it'll be more or less along a straight line. And you will, in fact, cross the boundary and be in the inconsistency zone. Because this zone gets very thin as you get down to characters changing at a low rate. And this expression, although it considers all possible outcomes, all possible interior states, but mostly what it is saying this is the probability of two changes, one on each of the long branches, that they both change simultaneously, not coordinate in any way, but that they both happen to change because they're big branches. And this is the probability of a single change in the interior branch, which would be informative. The 1 minus Q comes from all the other stuff. If P and Q are small, it's mostly these two you're comparing. And so parsimony is, in a sense, doing poorly because it is assuming it is not ready for the case in which it is more probable that you have two parallel changes than a single informative change in a small branch. Two parallel changes in long branches. And this zone is where things like two parallel changes in long branches occur more frequently than a single change in an interior branch. Okay. You can do it for DNA also. If you hope that I will not require on the test that you memorize those formulas, fear not, I will not require you to memorize them, but for this one, you're really going to have me not require it. This is the case for DNA. Same tree, I'm not showing the branches very different, but these are Qs and these are Ps. But now, the net change with DNA in a simple symmetrical model of DNA, which we'll see later, probably Friday, are called the Jukes-Kander model, which is the simplest symmetrical process of DNA. It says if you change, you change to one of the other three states chosen at random, it would equal frequency. We can make similar analysis. We have a data set. If we have, we know what the states are here. Here's two C's and two A's, for example. And we have don't know what the states are at the interior nodes. So we have to add up over all possibilities. Now there are four possibilities here and four possibilities there. So there are 16 terms instead of four terms. And you can do it, though. And under this simple symmetrical model of change of DNA, we do all the same things. And we get things like probability of CCAA is this thing. You may wonder whether when I derived this, I got it right. Yes, because I've done it in computer algebra. I've done all the steps in computer algebra, and that's it. Now, that's one of the ways you can get an XXYY, an XXYY pattern. There are, of course, a total of 12 different ways that you can get them. Four possibilities for X and then three possibilities for Y. So there they are. Okay, this is the product of a lot of some getting it wrong and then doing the whole thing in computer algebra, and there they are. They've got terms like 627ths and 281sts and, you know, a whole lot of stuff. Okay.
Where those like weird fractions really coming from?
They come from the fact that, first of all, you have a one-quarter chance of starting in a certain state. Mm-hmm. And then when you make changes, you have only a one-third chance. If you're making two parallel changes, for example, mm-hmm. you have a one-third chance that they end up at the same state.
Okay.
So the two long branches can both change but get you to different states. That's a different case from when they get you to the same state. That brings in a lot of halves. Thirds and two-thirds and so on, putting those together. That's where they come from. Okay, there they are. So now you say, we check whether this is bigger than that, and it always is after a lot of messing about. And then we look for the condition. We say, when is this quantity greater than that quantity? So you put this on the left and that on the right with a greater than sign, and you try to simplify furiously. And then you come out with an expression. And then you say, let's solve for p. Let's find out for a given q what the value of p would have to be. And here it is. If you thought it was going to come out simple and clear, you were wrong. It's a mess. It's got numbers like 567 in there, and square roots. And it's horrible. If you take P and Q small, it comes very nearly. Before it was whether P squared is less than Q. Now it's a third P squared is less than Q. Why is that? Because in this case where you have few changes, two parallel changes only give you the same state a third of the time. The first one changes to some from, let's say, G to some other state. And the second one changes from G, but only a third of the time does it get to the same state that the first one got to, because there were three possibilities to change to. Then it looks nice. So we plot it. And here it is. Here is an inconsistency zone. It is not the same. Now the probabilities P and Q go up to 3/4. They don't go up to a half. A long enough branch has a 3/4 chance of ending up changing because it goes to one of the four at random. Three of them are different. Everything looks similar, although if you look closely, this boundary is diving into the vertical axis more quickly. This is only roughly a third the width of the previous zone. So having more states makes you less likely to have parsimony go wrong. But there still is a consistency zone in an inconsistency zone. I'm going to have to stop here. which is a shame because next time we're going to talk about the history of the field and the philosophy, I will show you a little bit more about this stuff, and then we'll go into history and philosophy and mostly complete it next time. So I will see you then. And we'll have a new homework assignment given out next time, and I hope I'm going to try to get as far as I can in grading the homeworks before then. We'll see if I succeed. I do seem to have all the homeworks except for one person we have special permission. Okay, so we'll start.